Welcome everyone to another episode of the Average Ontario Anglers Podcast. As usual, we have Jesse, and we also have another exciting guest, Brad Scott, we have with us. You might know him as the Canadian Cowboy Angler. What do you call yourself there, Brad?
Yeah, we're Canadian Cowboy Outdoors, so we're doing it all outdoors with a cowboy hat on, I guess.
It's a staple. Whenever I see it at the trade shows and whatnot, just look for the guy in the tall guy in the cowboy hat, and oh, I know where he is.
Yeah, we got a brand going on here, so it's working.
Now, we have a really cool subject today. We're going to be talking about pre-spawn bass, some early season bass, as we have available to us in Ontario. That's kind of more recent in years. But before we get into that main topic, as tradition states, Jesse has an interesting fishing fact, and we will be seeing if it is interesting today.
All right, so this isn't fishing fact per se, but this is something that you may encounter while you are fishing and why it should be terrifying for you. So I'm sure most of us have seen one of these things. It's a beaver. I thought we could do a little bit of an interesting fishing fact about a specific thing about a beaver, and that is their teeth, which is very interesting. I know Brad works with a lot of animals when you're working at the zoo, so this stuff may not be super new to you, but all this stuff I had never heard of, so listen to this.
Oh, this will be fun.
Yeah. I'm sure most of us know that a beaver's teeth never stop growing over the course of their lifetime. They have very, very strong, sharp teeth. Or the reason why that their teeth is so strong is because of their special enamel on their teeth. If you've ever seen a beaver, and oftentimes you'll look at their teeth, you'll be like, man, doesn't this thing brush its teeth? Why are its teeth like orange? Like, man, he missed, you know, brushing his teeth for a few weeks there.
Now, yeah, forgot to spit out his chew.
Yeah. Now, do you have any ideas, Andrew, why their teeth may be kind of an orangish color? Give me your best guess.
I would say it's some sort of mineral in like the coating that just makes it stronger.
Yeah, exactly. So other rodents have magnesium in their teeth enamel, but on the other hand, beavers actually have iron inside their teeth enamel. So that's why it actually gives their teeth a bit of orange coloring. It causes orange coloring, but it makes their teeth stronger against mechanical stress and makes them more resistant to acid. Now, I don't know why they'd have to be resistant to acid, but hey, sounds like a little bit of a cool superpower. Imagine if your teeth were literally coated in iron enamel and they were acid proof, you'd be pretty much unbeatable.
Well, I think tree sap might be slightly acidic, so that might be why.
This is an interesting thing because this is a question that I typed in, do beaver's teeth on Google? And the first one that came up was, do beaver's teeth rust? Now we know that, yes, that makes sense. So we know that metal rusts, right? And beavers apparently have iron enamel on their teeth. So do beaver's teeth rust? What do you think?
I would say yes.
Yeah, that is true. So to a certain extent, their teeth do rust, and that's actually what causes their teeth to be kind of a dark yellowish kind of orange color, which is pretty interesting. I'm glad that our teeth don't do that. That would be pretty rancid. So a beaver's teeth that are in their mouths are also self-sharpening, which is pretty cool. Our teeth obviously don't sharpen themselves, which again, that's a good thing. But as it gnaws through wood, the front edges of their teeth become worn down. However, the back edge of the tooth remains sharp, which allows the beaver to continue gnawing effectively. So they self-sharpen, which is obviously essential for them because they're chewing like all day on wood, right? Now, here's the scary part. So now we know beavers have iron enamel, super strong metal teeth that kind of rust, and they're razor sharp. Do they attack humans?
I've come close to experiencing it.
Yes. So there are many, not just a few, there are many examples of beavers attacking humans. So there's actually an angler that was bitten to death by a beaver. And what he was doing is he was fishing. He saw a beaver and apparently he thought, you know, wow, that's pretty cool. As most of the time when we see a beaver, what do? You take out your phone, you try to take a picture of it. Now, if you're someone like us that lives in the city, seeing a beaver might be pretty cool. If you live in the country, that may be just like seeing a squirrel for everyone else. But this guy who was fishing, he saw a beaver, whipped out his camera or his phone, tried to take a picture of it. Apparently, he didn't approach too stealthily. And the the beaver basically ran at him, bit him in the thigh, and severed his artery. And his friends couldn't stop the bleeding. And he actually, unfortunately, perished. That's just one example. So I wasn't afraid of beavers before. I was like, oh, they're pretty cool. You know, they're chill. But apparently, they're bloodthirsty mammals.
Hey, listen, I'm gonna help verify that because at the Toronto Zoo, imagine we have lions and tigers and we had beavers on exhibit. The beavers' locks on their exhibit were dangerous animal keys you needed to access their holding.
Wow.
So you needed the same experience and knowledge that you would take to work with lions and tigers to work with the beavers.
That's hilarious.
That tells you something right there too, right? So that's like, you don't make many mistakes with either one of those. One mistake and you're a goner.
100%.
To drop off some bark to the beavers and my big toe is gone.
That's right.
It goes on to say that beaver attacks are rare, obviously, but when they do occur, most of the reasons that a beaver attack happens is because the beaver itself is rabid. So that particular beaver is crazy. It's, you know, it's thirsting for blood, basically. It's crazy. We'll just say that. So not just a normal beaver is just going to run up to you and attack you and try to kill you. But there have been many cases where this happens. And there was another one that I looked at this article, and a beaver ran after a Russian man and two girls, and they were both seriously injured after being mauled by a beaver. So imagine, not only is one beaver attacking one person, it's attacking multiple people at the same time. Yes. So if you see a beaver when you're fishing, that's cool. If it looks slightly crazy, run in the opposite direction. Now, that is the interesting fishing fact, but it's also a public service announcement. Beware.
So essentially what you're saying is, in the animal kingdom, beavers are the Kanye West of animals because they have steel teeth. What a timely callback that is. Now, I didn't realize that's, first of all, Jesse, that's A+. That was great. And it made me value my life so much more. You know, when you have a near-death experience, like kind of like wakes you up and you make life changes. I didn't realize how close I've come to death when I had to take care of business and had a beaver cut down a sapling like 4 feet from me. Do you remember that?
I remember.
I'm like huddling in a ditch because there's no, it's early spring, we're fishing, and I'm like huddling, kind of like half squatting. It was bad. I had to go, and a beaver just waddles up. Literally, I could reach out and touch him if I wanted to. He just waddles up, cuts down the sapling, stares at me, just drags it away. And I'm like, I'm mid business and I can't go. Like, I can't leave the area. But yeah, I walked with my life that day. Anyways, that's
it's a close call.
That was an awesome, awesome, interesting fishing fact. Now into our main topic. Now you might be wondering, why do we have Brad here? It's because this guy, he's a hammer. He's good at catching bass. Catching a lot of different species, but would you say you specialize in bass fishing, or that's kind of your favorite?
I kind of say it's my favorite. Specialized, I'd say, yeah, absolutely. Just by default, the fact that the time that I spend fishing bass, you know, the skill level's raised above most others. I try to get out and do the multi-species angler. Listen, you know what? I end up being really good at bass. Also because I do get the opportunity to travel, you know, down south quite a bit in the wintertime. And you'll lose, you know, further south you go, the more species you lose unless we start hitting the salt water. So, you know, I do 12 months of the year bass fishing. You know, that's going to, you know, help productivity right there.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. We kind of alluded to the fact that you've done work for, you know, the zoo in the past, in front of the zoo. What line of work are you doing now? But when you're not on the water, what's kind of your go-to?
Right now, my, what we call Monday to Friday, my day-to-day job, I'm general manager at Sandbanks Campground down here in Prince Edward County. So my job, you know, takes me to the beach, basically from April 1st to October 15th. I do a year's worth of work in 6 months. And then at October, we shut the gates to the campground and I have 6 months off to go and explore other fishing opportunities. So lucky for me, my boat is about 5 steps away from my office. I got a busy, busy summer. Of course, if anyone knows Prince Edward County in the summertime, it's wine country. It's bougie. It's weddings. It's everything, you know, to do with tourism. And so it's 24/7, but I'm able to break away often enough to get on the water just about 7 days a week when I'm out here, weather dependent. And then, of course, once the fall comes, hunting season takes a little bit of my time. But once the snow flies, and since ice fishing, well, you guys know how that went this year. Sooner you go down south, the better, because there was, I got out like four times ice fishing. It did. And here I am, really, at Bay of Quinte, right? I'm in the hub of walleye fishing, of cold water ice fishing. And this is supposed to be, you know, the best place to go. Of course, we do get out and we do the cold water lake trout and the December walleye fish out here, out in the reach. But, you know, as soon as we get that ice on there and you can't boat, but yet still not thick enough to ice fish, we'll head down south and do more bass. So that's where I'm at right now. Previously, I did... I mean, from the beginning, I worked for Ministry of Natural Resources for a few years. I did a lot of research studies for them. And then I moved on to Toronto Zoo as being a biologist in the wildlife care department. Spent 20 years at Toronto Zoo, working everything from the ornithology department, furthered my education through Cornell. So like me and Andy from the office are red buddies there. So I mentioned Cornell 17 times. Well, you guys can shut me up. But, you got that. Good. And then even to the fact where my last tenure at the Toronto Zoo, I worked in the fish research lab and was involved with the breeding of African species of ngaygays and helped spearhead the Atlantic salmon reintroduction that you guys are well aware of and spoken of on your show as well. So I was there pretty much since the beginning, about 15 years ago, when we were hatching salmon out at Toronto Zoo and repopulating them in Duffins Creek.
Interesting. So we're going to be picking your brain about none of your schooling and all about your bass fishing today.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what.
I'm sure there's some overlap.
There's no way you can't be good. It's got to be crossover, right? Fishing is science, guys.
So we talked about right at the beginning of the episode. So there's recent changes to in zone 20. So up in Northern Ontario, now for those who don't know, like from here in Southern Ontario, if you're in the GTA, you can drive to Texas in the same amount of times it takes for you to drive up to, you know, the northern part of Ontario. It's like Ontario is huge. Canada is even huger, if that's a word, which it's not.
That's right.
Up in the northern area, been either a year-round season or an early season for a long period of time now, for going back a long time, and you could even keep them. But in zone 20, so down here in the GTA area, just kind of around it, you have an early season for bass, which has come up due to a lot of the fact with some of the tournaments. They're fishing some pre-spawn bass tournaments, which is exciting stuff. First of all, what are your thoughts on having the pre-spawn fishing? Now, right now it is just catch and release, but what are your thoughts on having the pre-spawn season?
Yeah, that's right. Being relatively new in Ontario, so 2021 was the first spring that Ontario introduced the what they call a early bass season opportunity, an early fishing opportunity. And, you know, so generically, we just call it a pre-spawn period. I really think it's a great opportunity to go out and fish species of fish that we all know so well from, you know, July to September, and be able to fish them in a life cycle or space in their lives that's just unique and new to us. So for me, who gets to go down south and travel and fish a lot of pre-spawn, you see, Andrew mentioned that up north, they have open seasons for largemouth bass during the spawn season or pre-spawn. But down south, there's also no closed season for bass at all. So they're open year-round where you can fish pre-spawn, spawn, and post-spawn. Having fished those opportunities, having that in Ontario is unique, and in a way that I believe, because down in south, your spawn can be spread out over 4 months. So the risk of disturbing a fish's life cycle or the population of fish in one certain lake or so is that minimized by 33% of them are spawning on a certain day that you're there. The other 60% are either post-spawn or pre-spawn. So to disturb that population, when you get to Ontario and that time frame is so condensed that virtually all our bass are spawning at the same time. So in order to open up a spawning or, you know, a year-round bass season would be detrimental because you can go in and destroy population pretty quick when every bass is spawning and we go and hit, you know, sight fish, some bedded bass, you know, we can take them all off their beds in one day and ruin a lake. But having said that, they opened up in zone 20. So zone 20 is Lake Ontario virtually, plus it's, you know, kind of a corresponding bay. So it includes Bay of Quinte, Toronto Harbor, Hamilton Harbor, and into Niagara River, and up into the St. Lawrence, just about to get an Ottawa. So it's a very big lake to cover.
Zone 20 is the size of some states.
Zone 20, yes, is bigger than Massachusetts. So the theory is that there's such a big population that we can at least, you know, explore and enjoy a pre-spawn bass season without disturbing their spawning rituals or disturbing their spawning habitat. Close it, allow the fish to spawn, and reopen again. So it's exciting times, and I think it's a great opportunity there for Zone 20.
Yeah, and I know that there are some rules that were put in place for fishing for these fish. So maybe explain to the listener, what are some of the rules about catching these bass during this time?
Yeah, that's right. So of course, when you're implementing a brand new season, something that the fishermen, myself, you guys, and guys growing up here, haven't experienced, you got to kind of, you know, you do have to regulate it. It's like, you know, when they open up the first asphalt road with the cars, we got to put some speed limits on these things. Otherwise, people are just going to crash and burn. So we'll start them off slow, and then we'll move ahead forward as we learn, you know, what works and doesn't work for our area, seeing it being new for our area. So one of the things that they do is catch and release only. So that is just strict catch, release. There is no conservation limit or a sportsman limit, right? So there's no limits at all for keeping these bass, largemouth or smallmouth. The second thing that they implemented, which was under discussion and it was sort of under a trial basis, was this immediate release clause, right? So they have a no photo clause, is what we call a no photo clause, which means they have written in words, and it's all about wording, saying the fish must be released immediately after the catch without any pause taken to, or, you know, made to take pictures or photograph the fish. So the fish must be immediately released.
I was going to say, I think the wording is nothing can prolong the release. You can't prolong the release.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Prolong the release. So having said that, I mean, with the advent of, you know, the social media and everybody having cameras on their boats and things like that, you know, with video and videography and drones, you can video your tape. You can video your catch and video your release, and you can screenshot photos of you holding your bass and not having, you know, either the MNR or corresponding conservation officers being able to differentiate a photograph of you with the fish or a screenshot, still shot from a video taken. This year, they're actually, over the wintertime, they've rewritten some new progressive rules. They're not implemented yet for this season, but they will be definitely talked about, voted on, and discussed throughout this year after the season goes, to add in a release as soon as possible clause after you take a picture sort of thing. So it is being discussed whether, you know, it's a feasible aspect. My personal belief is that the disturbance has been made when you put the hook in their mouth, you drag them through the water, you lift them out of the water, you put them in a net. That's the disturbance.
Yeah.
Holding them for 2 seconds for a picture is not where the damage is being done. So, you know what, if they allow the one, you know, the other ship,
yes.
Of course, they, like I said, you want to start it off slow. You want to put in some, you know, some guidelines and rules just so that, you know, we can learn as we go without having to draw back and, you know, put in new rules after we made the mistakes. So I like the way that they've thought about it.
Like, I would have to agree with you. I don't see an issue with, for an ethical side, taking a photo of a fish. Again, we have the laws in place, so don't take that time right now until those laws will change. But for me, let's say it's a season where you can keep a fish. If you're catching and you finally got like your personal best bass and you put that on a stringer and you hang it off the back of the boat, you paddle back to your dock and then you have it out of the water for 5 minutes, taking multiple photos of their family with his bass. Like, that's nice to have those memories. Then you go to release that thing, the chances of it surviving is next to none.
Exactly.
And that, even though, yes, you can physically keep the fish, it's in season, you could technically legally do that, that's not ethical. That's because right. You're going to be killing that fish for no purpose. So practicing good photo taking, we've talked about that before, like with Jesse and I in the podcast, of, you know, plan in advance. Like, how do you want to hold a bass if you catch a bass? How do you want to hold a muskie if you catch a muskie? And we kind of have set poses, if it were, of how we're going to do it. So we can, you know, take the fish out, take the photo, You know, we take maybe 5 seconds of the fish and then it's back in the net, release it.
So again, that's exactly plays into the whole, it's better just to say, do not delay the release, than to say you can take a picture, because then you're interpreting how long can somebody keep that bass in their hand to take that picture. You're leaving it up to them. Some of the wording that they're going to try to implement is boat side. You're going to hear that word used a couple of times. So they're going to try to, photographs must, you know, must be boat side. Fish still must be released immediately or as soon as possible after a boat side photograph has been taken. You know, again, you're going to leave it up to people's discretion. But if it doesn't, you know, if people can, you know, remain on the ethical side, then this might be something that we can do. In the meantime, we have video, which is a double-edged sword, because it could also come back to haunt you if you actually don't. So,
yeah. Now, right now this is going to be released. It'll be mid. The season will pretty much be over when this gets released, won't it, Jesse?
Nope. I'm a good producer. It'll actually be right before. Yep.
Oh, he's going to fast track it.
Excellent. So if you're hearing this and you haven't either taken the opportunity or haven't had the time to get out for some pre-spawn bass, we're going to be talking about some of the tips. Again, we're talking to a guy who not only has experience fishing the pre-spawn or these early season for bass in Ontario, but also down in the States across these other areas. So he's got a lot of experience of fishing kind of this early season. Even if it's been perhaps a different technical time of year, it's been the pre-spawn season for where he's been fishing. So when would you say is a good time to start targeting these fish? Like, what are you looking for either water temperature or even areas? What are you looking for to target these fish when it is kind of the pre-spawn?
Right on. Good question. So we're going to start with, of course, in Ontario, we're going to deal with ice and ice conditions first, right? So at ice out is usually for us around April 1st. You know, a lot of my research and memory goes just defaults to April 1st. So around April 1st, we have ice out, especially Lake Ontario area. Of course, northern regions there, they might even still have ice out in the middle of April into May. But having said that, just because the water's open doesn't mean the fish are biting. I've targeted ice fishing, intentionally saying I'm going to go out and I got some areas I want to actually, because the bass open season is open throughout the ice season as well. I've intentionally targeted bass ice fishing 2-3 fish day, you know, is a really hot day. Anyone who's, you know, subsequently caught a bass ice fishing, you've done it once in 10 years. They're sluggish. They're slow. You know, you might as well watch paint dry. It's funner than bass fishing in the ice. Having said that, once the ice melts, we got open water. That first 2 weeks after open water is a turbulent time. It's very similar to the fall when you have that turnover period. As soon as the ice leaves, that ice cap on top of the water, everything underneath the ice is tranquil. It's all quiet. The water's not moving, unless there's some current or whatever. But otherwise, it's just peaceful down there. As soon as that ice comes off, it all breaks loose. Water turns over, right? The wind and the waves, the dead leaves and the sticks and the weeds all mix together. So there's about 2 week period where, you know, the lake can basically turn to mud. I usually leave that time alone as well. Again, you can go out there and catch a fish or two, but guys, it's like 5 degrees out. You know what I mean? It's not the funnest time to go out. This is the time to change the oil on your boat and get your boat ready and everything else to charge your batteries. Second to third week of April, that's when I'm really, really putting that boat in the water. And I'll tell you what, having a thermometer and taking it to the lake every day for a couple days in a row and finding that time frame where we hit 50 degrees of a surface temperature. And that's going to be 50 degrees in the shallowest water you have. So it works great for all your, you know, for all your bank anglers, shore anglers. That's where the bass are going to be. They're going to be accessible to everybody. So 2 weeks after ice out, we're going to look into about 50 degrees. As soon as it's 50 degrees, we're starting to cast a line. That's going to be broken down. Now, basically, now we have 4 weeks left of fishing because the season will close May 10th. So we have about 4 weeks. You know, a lot can happen in 4 weeks. You can have a cold front come through and an unseasonably cold spring and 2 weeks of your season, you're fishing negative fish, right? Because they're still in cold water. So there's two different, but the best news about it is, again, like we mentioned before, is that the bass are all spawning. So they're all going to be there. They all spawn at the same time. So they're all going to be in the same place. Like down south, you know, I could fish up a foot of water and lily pads. Later in the afternoon, I'm fishing 8 feet of water. In the evening, I'm fishing 15 feet of water and brush piles and catching fish all in the same day in different stages. Here, they're all going to be in the same place at the same time. 50 degree water, to about 54 degree water, those fish will hold out deeper. They're not going to move shallow yet. There's no cover in the shallow yet. So my kind of biology thinking, the thought is they're not going to tolerate the colder water in shallow because they don't have the cover. But once it does warm up, that warm water is more attractive than being safe in cover. So we're 50 to 54 degrees. We like fishing something deeper into 5 to 7 feet of water. But since there's no weeds, we're looking for hard structure. So anything you can find, rock piles, dock pilings, riprap, even old stands of reeds, you know, the buggy whips and stuff like that, but they're like, you know, they're just like broken sticks and they're, you know, like they're just standing there like they've been mowed off. Those things will attract the bass and they'll hold to those. Once the water gets above 50, 54 degrees, man, then they're on fire. They can fire up at 54 degrees like you think they would fire up when the water's 74 or 80 degrees. It's a big difference for them because it's the warmest water available in the lake. And once they get there and it warms, you know, they get that one switch flicked. There's this time period in the pre-spawn where, you know, the fishing can be really hot. So a kind of a neutral negative at 50 to 54, and they're going to be positive for 54 and above.
Because I guess at that temperature, their metabolism starts becoming active again, right? They now, it's warm enough because, again, cold-blooded. They're warm enough to actually have that return on investment of making the effort to go chase them and to go eat something, and they can start growing. They can start taking on that food and that sustenance for the spawn coming up.
That's right. They're weeks away still from spawning, so they still need energy, right?
We're talking about zone 20. So if say like a new angler is looking at the zone map, they'll just see Lake Ontario and those, you know, those little bays and stuff that you're mentioning too. But Lake Ontario is very different depending on where you are. Like you can walk down to the end of the road where I live and look in Lake Ontario and it's just sand. You know, you don't see any bass looking cover. So if someone was just getting into fishing early zone bass, what kind of areas are you going to be looking for if you're just getting into it? Something that you could fish from shore possibly.
Right. So you're going to be looking for the south facing shallowest bays that extend inland from the main lake. So, I mean, all along Lake Ontario, you guys, you know, fish the GTA area. There's inland bays all around. Those areas are going to hold bass and they're going to warm up fast. And there are largemouth bass that are out in main Lake Ontario that will come in and spawn in these areas in the spring. So all along Lake Ontario, I mean, again, with the Google Maps being golden nowadays, you can find these sort of inland bays all along the shorelines, not necessarily like where the tributaries come in, but you'll see subsequent other bays around all the way through there. You can get into Bay Quinney. And into Bay Quinney, of course, has lots of, you know, just bassy shorelines, you know, dips in the bays. Anything that's south facing is going to warm up first. Muddy bottom is what you're going to be looking for. Of course, the darker the bottom, the warmer it's going to be faster. So it's going to warm up faster. So those are some of the areas you can look for.
We're going to be going into a bit about, you know, lures and presentations in a bit and what gear we're using. But what's, and maybe some of your biology info will come into this again. What is the kind of the behavior of these bass right now? Because again, we keep saying like pre-spawn, early season, and pre-spawn just means it's before they spawn. So it doesn't necessarily mean then that they're actually taking this time to make beds. We know they're coming into the shallows close to their spawning area, I guess. But are they just cruising around in that area or are they really hunkering down into small locations right now?
Good question. So right now, this is a phase where they're in a holding pattern. So the first thing that they're doing biologically is they're looking just for warmer water. They're just going to cruise from, because in the wintertime, we find them in deep holes. We'll find them, you know, just belly on the bottom, and they can be in 10 to 15 or 20 feet of water even. As soon as that ice comes off, they're searching for warm water, wherever that's going to be, right? So that's their motivation. So the other thing was their motivation is warm water. They're going to seek it out. It's going to be in those bays first. What they're doing, though, when you say their behavior, you're right. They're not actively looking for beds. They're just actively looking for warm water. So that's going to be their motivation for them moving. When they find that warm water, they do have to find some type of cover or whatever. Bass are still cover oriented. We know that, but we also know that in spring, there very rarely is any. When that water does get above 45, weeds do start growing. We don't see them, but they are on the bottom. So, I mean, we have to be able to try to, you know, visualize. And if you have, you know, even if you're a shore angler, you plan ahead, you might have a picture of a bay and you can see where there's lily pads growing there. In the spring, those lily pads are still there, but they're underwater. So those bass will hold into those you know, sparse, I say cotton beds of lily pads that are 6 to 8 inches tall. And they'll hold on those beds of lily pad growth, 4, 5, 6 fish at a time, just to be in the warmer water while they're waiting to move up to spawn. And as far as their metabolism goes, like you said, it's growing. So these are feeding bass, but the water is still cold. So just imagine that it's like when you're in a dream and you're trying to move fast. You really want something, but you're slow. So they will actively come and grab your bait, but they're not swimming fast to get it. So they're actively feeding like they need to, but their motion, their body movement is still like slow motion.
Would you say finesse size, or would they still go for something large? If it's slow and still large, would they look at that as that's a good food source?
Yeah, absolutely. They still go for something large. When we get into some of the baits, you know, my description of them will basically, it's going to key into that exactly. To be able to focus on they're still want to feed, but you got to keep it slow for them in order for them to feed on it. I mean, they will bite it. You don't have to finesse them to get them to bite something, but you got to give them a chance to bite it and don't move it away from them too fast. So their motivation at this time of year is warm water. So they're just moving up and getting in that warm water, and they're holding onto any little piece of grass they can find. And if the water level and if the water temperature drops while they're there, second week of April, they'll drop back into a little deeper water and hold on to hard structure. Right? Because hard structure is always there, no matter what the water temperature is. Then it warms up again and they'll move into warm weather. Once the moon cycle comes into play and the water temperature is ideal, then from there they break into the spawning mode.
And that's something we always say, Jesse, is no matter what any of the guys that we talk to, our own experience, we go to a new lake, oh, where should we fish? And literally every single guy we ever asked says, find the weeds. If it's winter, find the green weeds. If it's fall, find the green weeds. Don't go to the dead ones. You know, this early bass. What do? You find the weeds.
Yeah. Find the green weeds. It's springtime. Find the green weeds. But I sprinkle in there a little bit of also find the hard cover. And that's another thing that, you know, when I do fall fishing and, you know, I fish a lot of reservoirs down south and things like that. In Florida, they do a lot of spraying. There's not a lot of weeds in some of these lakes that we fish. And, our lakes that are up north, mesotrophic, and even more than that, a lot of them are just rock-oriented. So, I mean, it's either weeds or hard structure. But nonetheless, it's find something that, you know, that they can hold on to when there's nothing else around.
And even mud bottom or dark bottom or timber. Timber can be really good at retaining and being that, you know, half a degree or 1 degree warmer. So even if, like you say, there's no weed growth, look for something that might indicate or might hold a bit more heat or absorb a bit more heat during the day. Because again, that's like we said in any species.
Exactly.
When in wintertime, they're not comfortable. Lake trout are comfortable. That's about it. Nothing else is comfortable. And they're trying to find the warmest water.
That's right. Lake trout are comfortable. Nobody else is comfortable. And Andrew, you hit the nail on the head there. That's a 1-2 punch. Laydowns, timber, brush piles literally are going to be like, they're not big happening around here, but if you're a shore angler or whatever, or, you know, shallow water in personal watercrafts, lots of trees and laydowns. You got the 1-2 punch. You got the cover for them to hold on to. Plus, you said that, you know, with those trees in there, it helps warm that area, that pocket up even more than the surrounding area. Even 10 feet around it could be a couple degrees colder than where that actual tree is sitting in there. And one of my latest posts I had, I use a laser thermometer or thermometer gun. And even when you're in your canoe or shore fishing, you can find pockets of water that are 2 or 3 degrees warmer than the next, and literally use that as your target to cast into. And you'd be surprised at this time of year, that'll hold 2 or 3 bass just sitting in that one spot. That's their motivation, temperature, with a little bit of cover mixed in.
Yeah, we do the same with pike fishing, right? So like we start pike fishing in March. Like our first day this year was March 3rd. We went out, water was 37, and we're looking for temperature differences. Like some areas that we'll fish, it'll be, Andrew's always like, what's the temp here? I'm like, oh, it's, you know, 39. Oh, it's 37 over here. We're looking for the warmest temperature possible. Cause you have to think, like Andrew said, the fish are, they're looking for that warmer water. And like you said, even if there's not cover there, they want to be comfortable because there's not a lot of cover in other places. So they're like, oh, it's warm unless, you know, not a lot of cover, but it's at least it's comfortable here. Almost every species that you fish for in the spring, guys that fish crappie do that. Guys that fish bass do that, pike.
Yes, right.
Temperature is very important. So
find those pockets of warm water.
Yeah. And it is funny, like you said, how even within a few hundred feet, how there can be pockets of water that is significantly different temperature. So make sure you check. And like you said, a thermometer, like you said, one of those laser ones, that's a great tip, because that's something you could just throw in your tackle box and easily check the water temperature without having to dip a thermometer that's in the water right. like a fool.
Yeah, in your vest, or you don't have to paddle over to it. If you even if you have a fish finder that's got a temperature probe, I mean, that's the temperature right there at the bow of your boat, but it's not, you know, 10, 15 feet away when you see that tree lay down that's, you know, half a cast away. You can just point to it and go, oh, yeah, that's got some extra temperature there. So a little trick I use, that's the temperature gun that we used to use to do water temperatures on the fish tanks at the zoo. So I'll take that one with me when I leave. Not physically take the actual tool, because they have Amazon. Lots of them on Amazon.
I was going to say, hopefully no one from the Toronto Zoo is listening to this. Just kidding.
I hope they are.
We were joking around with that with Jason Barnoose. You're saying that when a cool gadget to have would be, I was saying it'd be cool to be able to tell temperature, especially subsurface temperature, as like the next advanced technology, like instead of just, you know, something different than live stream, what's new. And then he was saying, why don't we just take one of those laser thermometers, strap it to the bottom of a drone, and you can fly over the bay and see, like, that's genius.
Yeah, infrared camera drones. So, you know, those, they exist. They're going to be implemented, I'm sure, soon enough in our boats, if we let them.
So getting into the next point, I thought we could get to the point about bait or presentation, yeah. Basically lures. So I know there's probably tons of baits you can use to catch bass this time of year, but if you had to pick a few of your favorites that are the most productive, what would be your first picks?
All right, good. We're going to break it down into two categories, okay? So we're going to break it down into the 50 degree to 54 degree bass that we're fishing. So if we come out there and the water's on the cooler side, and then we're going to turn it up. Once the bass get above 54 degrees, we can totally change our tactics and increase our catches, but have a lot more fun. So in the colder water we're fishing, I usually don't start till it's about 50 degrees. We're going to fish a lot slower. So I rigged up a couple and shaky head. So we like using, you know, stick worms, but not like, we're not going to use the classic Senko in a wacky style. So always either Texas rig, it's one of my favorites, or on a shaky head. These bass that are sluggish, they're all going to eat stuff that's on or near the bottom. They're not going to chase stuff that's even falling. So having a wacky rig that falls down horizontally, they're going to wait till it hits the bottom anyways. Personally, I love shaky head. They get to the point, they get to the bottom. And once they're on the bottom, then you can drag them through the mud. You can stop them, leave them, let them sit for 5-10 seconds. The fish will grab it. If it gets near a fish, the fish will grab it. You don't have to finesse it to bite. You don't have to, you know, shake or wait or anything else like that, anything fancy. Get it near them, give them a chance, and they're going to bite it, and they're going to grab that. Get it down to the bottom. We're only fishing 5 feet of water. So, you know, there is no real water column. We got to wait for it to get through. Get it down to them, get them on the bottom. The second one for that is like a belly weighted swim bait, soft swim bait, Kytec like this with a belly weight. Again, this is a cast. Let it get to the bottom and then just drag it through the mud. You just drag it through the mud. A little bit of a tail wiggle on it is great, but it's a bait you can pause. You can wait, just sit it in the mud, especially when we're finding those hard bottom places. If there's rocks or other structures, you just get it on there and just let it sit. If you get it near them, they're going to bite it. I'm going to try a little bit different this year with a line through. So it's a line through swim bait head with the treble hook on top. Again, I might get a lot more hookups with the treble hook on top, but it's, again, no hook on the bottom. It's going to drag on the bottom. Again, the theme is get your bait on the bottom. The third one for the water temperature, don't sleep on this one, guys. Tube jigs. Again, everybody's saying tube jigs so much nowadays. All of a sudden, well, they're not, you know, they're back to the popularity that they used to be. And there's a good reason. There's every bass out there is less than 8 years old. So no one's seen a tube jig so much. But Texas rig a tube jig, throw it out there and get it to the bottom. Again, get it near them and they're going to grab it. The next thing is once that water temperature gets above 54, then we're on fire. Then we're talking chatterbaits. You know, you guys love chatterbaits, right?
Yes.
So listen up. chatterbaits I like, and the colors Like, if you can't guess my colors, you guys got to probably, Jesse knows these ones. Green pumpkin, anything that's a dull color, right? We're not talking that it has to be green pumpkin, but we're saying something that's of a dull variety has got it right there. Now, here's the big difference for me, chatterbaits in the springtime. It's just like when you wake up and someone shines a bright light in your face, you know, you just kind of like, you don't want to see it. You shy away from it. So all my baits that I'm chatterbait fishing, they all have the painted blades on them, right? You see, whether it's the jackhammers, they got sort of the green pumpkin blade. Yeah. Z-Man on their original chatterbait even has that sort of black onyx color. This is a bait here I used from last year right now. This is a chatterbait that I fished with last year. You can see that bait actually has the paint just knocked right off it. Once the paint got knocked off it, the fish stopped biting it. I literally threw it in my box. I didn't take it out again until today because this bait being shiny now, the black paint's knocked off. It's no good. So all kinds of different companies make them. Slobber Knocker, like I said, you got the Z-Man, the Cross Eyes. If the water gets a little warm, if you want to get a little bit brighter color, we're going with a red, right? So we can use a green pumpkin colors with the black baits. But once again, the red still has that onyx black chatterbait blade. And we're going to put on trailers. Okay. So you can go with, we got, what are these ones called? Yeah. The shads, the razor shads. They look great. Green pumpkin power bait, 4-inch twister tails, or we go with, pintail trailer, just like that. The spikes from Z-Man also has them. A theme that you might be noticing is that for my chatterbait trailers, I don't use anything that's got a paddle, got a boot tail or paddle tail. Everything is, its action is going to be invoked by the chatterbait itself, or it has its own sort of built in where the water flows through action, like a twister tail. So I go twister tail or straight tail. Chatterbaits are great. You can just slow roll them. And if they're not bright and shiny, they're going to eat the heck out of them.
And they even have the Freedom one where they have like the big football head on it too. And those, if you want to drag a chatterbait, those are great.
Oh, yeah, I love that one, right? That one, do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you were just reminding me. I remember I have one right there in the black and blue. And it's really good. It's got the swivel on it. And you can feel that, especially because you're just going to be fishing. But the second one for the active bass is going to be your jerkbait, right? So go in, shallow jerkbait. It can be a KVD. We got the Rapala Maverick. And you guys, the old favorite that's quadrupled in price over time, but the X-Wrap. Again, it's not because we have to finesse them, but because it's a bait that we can get down 3 to 4 feet. That's all we're fishing anyways when they're in warm water, but we can pause it. And the thing is that we're not pausing it to finesse them to bite, we're pausing it to give them a chance just to catch up to it to bite it. So jerk baits work really well because you just get it down there and you just let it sit. And if you're over top of the pads or beside a brush pile, just give them a chance. Just about every fish that's out there will, but if you don't pull it away from them, they'll bite it. If we get 54, 58 degrees water, if we're lucky enough to get fast water like that, the last thing we're going with is our classic lipless crankbaits, our traps or however we want to call them. Again, colors, and you'll notice even with the jerkbaits, everything's kind of a muted color. In the springtime, there's nothing bright in the world. Except for, my new baby dog. he's real bright. But the fact is that when you're looking under the water, everything's dull. So we're not trying to stand out. We're not fishing really heavy cover. We're not trying to, they're not trying to find this bait through a jungle of weeds. It's coming through virtually. These back bays now are open, wide open, clear water. So we're using muted colors that don't surprise the bass, don't, shine a light in their eyes. They've been underwater in the darkness for months. From my experience, last thing they want to see is a bright, shiny, blades flashing in their face or chartreuse colors or things like that. We can lighten up the colors. So if we want to get a little lighter, we can get a square bill or something like that in an orange or brown. But lighter is different than brighter, right? So we can go lighter colors if we have a light day. I'll go to a watermelon with a red flake instead of a green pumpkin. I'll go to an orange or brown instead of this one here. It's called Day Old Guacamole. So it's got that everyone knows what Day Old Guacamole is. It's just kind of that oxidized avocado. And really, those colors, no shine on it. We know our friends, you know, you guys just talked to Dan from GLF, and with the no shine, it's a big deal on small bass. For me in the springtime for largemouth bass, again, it's the same thing. So here's a lipless, no shine on it at all. Even the red bait, if we want to go a little bit lighter but not brighter, again, it doesn't have the epoxy shine on it.
So you're telling me I have to buy a bunch more lures because all mine are white, shiny.
Always. Exactly. And you want to know something? At this point, if you put the bait in the right place and give them a chance to bite it, you're going to catch a few fish. There's fish out there. They haven't seen lures for months, right? So, and they're going to be getting hungry. So, I mean, and that kind of probably brings us to our next about rods and reels and line, right?
I was just going to mention, of all the baits you mentioned, they're all just popular bass baits. And again, like you said, kind of depends on the temperature, what lure you're going to use. Obviously, if it's colder, you have to go slower. When it warms up, you can go a little faster. But these baits, if you're an angler in Ontario, you probably own some of those. It's not like, oh, we're doing early season bass, I'm going to have to go buy all new gear. You don't. You have stuff that works and you can go out with the gear you already have, lures you already own, fish water you probably already fished before, but it's now just at a time when you weren't allowed to fish before, but now you are. So I think it's fantastic.
Exactly. So the gear, the lures, nothing's changed. The place that you're fishing, maybe those bays, you know, in July and August are choked out. You can't fish them, but that's where you might be in the spring. That might be the only difference, but you know them well. I think the only thing that's different is that the mindset to you're not finesse. You don't have to finesse these fish to bite, but you just have to stop the bait so that give them a chance to bite, and they will, that kind of thing. So it's a different little practice, but with all the gear and equipment you are and lures you already have.
And I'd make one more point. Like you said, you have to give the fish a chance to bite. And we talked about this at our early spring pike fishing episode a few weeks ago. Again, we're fishing in high 30s water. Like the water temps is ice cold. Sometimes you're fishing jerk baits, which is generally what we fish that time of year because it's the perfect bait. Sometimes we're letting those baits pause for 15 to 30 seconds.
When I heard you guys, I thought the same thing. It's not, and because at that 34 degrees, again, it's the method for getting sluggish fish a chance. For bass, it's just a matter of the bass want it. They just can't move as fast as they want to get it, right? So yeah, it's the exact same method though. You just want to give them that shot.
So if you're looking at the water temps is a little cooler, to have a little bit of patience, maybe slow down a little bit. I know for me, I'm a fast reeler. I just like chucking and winding fast, but really try to be like, you know what? I'm not catching anything. Maybe I have to slow down a little bit. So try that out.
That's right. Get it to the bottom too on the slow days. That's what's been best for me anyways.
So when it comes to gear, now I'm a gear junkie and me and Andrew have tons of combos. We know you don't need all this stuff. We just like it, but yeah. Brad just showing off his 30,000 rods over there. But for the techniques of the lures that you're kind of describing, maybe tell us like two or three combos that would be ideal for fishing some of those different techniques.
Okay.
Extra heavy flipping stick, 8 foot with a 400 size reel, right?
Exactly, right? So everybody all together now with me, 7-1 medium heavy, bait casting rod. Right, with a 6.5-1 gear ratio and 14-pound fluorocarbon. What else do you need? Listen, nothing fancy at all. We're fishing shallow water that's virtually open of any obstructions and, you know, and any type of snags or crags. We don't have to worry about the lure getting to the bottom and having to use, you know, even fluorocarbon if that's not your thing. Every one of my combos that I use in the spring, I use either mono or I use a copolymer because, again, I just like it slows it down. It slows the lure down, the line itself, because it's always a little bit thicker. These fish aren't line shy. We don't have to drop down to 6 or 8 pound test line for these bass. Again, remember, I mean, the mindset for us is that we're not finessing them. We're just slowing it down for them to get to it. So we can go ahead and put on 14 pound, you know, copolymer line or even monofilament. And it works just fine. It works perfect. And you can just catch every bass that sees your lure and have no problem reeling it in. I like using spinning gear, again, on my stick baits and my shaky heads. I just find that with the free spool on a spinning rod or a spinning reel, it gives you, for me, a little more casting accuracy when we do want to pinpoint some of those, you know, those grass piles or those weed pods that are just growing up. You can really just pinpoint and pop your shaky head right on top of that and just drag it through. But literally, guys, nothing fancy at all. Everything works well. 7.1 medium heavy, and that's it.
Nothing fancy. You probably already have gear.
Nothing. You already have it. I know you already have it. Yeah. Like anybody who's listening here, right? They do.
And it's one of those times, like you said, there's nothing to get hung up on. Like, unless you're fishing your own timber, which again, medium heavy, you have the backbone to pull it out.
Yeah.
But let's say you're fishing, you know, a bay that doesn't have timber. Maybe there's a few rocks in the bottom, but let's face it, you get snagged with a light action rod or a heavy action rod. If you're on a rock, you're on a rock.
If the rock's a rock, rock wins. You're playing rock, rod, line. It's like rock, paper, scissors, but because it's just rock. Wins.
But like, this is one of those times where you could, like, let's say you want to go for big bass, but in the summer you can't, because let's say you have one combo, you've got a medium power spinning rod, and you can't fish the heavy cover and, you know, throw top fodder frogs or flip, you know, 1 ounce baits in. The preseason or the early season is awesome because, like I said, you're fishing the same areas for the same fish, but the weeds aren't there yet.
I gotta tell you, you're right on the money. This is going to be a spot where a lot of people are going to catch their personal best bass. Because these bass are feeding up, they're going to be starting to build eggs. They are going to be heavier. We all already know that. They're accessible. And again, like you say, they're accessible. They're accessible to the bank angler, they're accessible to small craft, and accessible to the lures. I mean, like I said, you can just throw any lure with any rod you already have. You don't need drop shot, you know, gear. You don't need heavy flipping gear. Everything on the extremes of light or heavy, you know, just knock out just the three rods that are in the middle. That's all you're going to need for all these fish. And they're all there at the same time. And the big ones are there too.
So in a nutshell, what I'm getting from all this is an absolutely fantastic opportunity for Ontario anglers to catch awesome bass during the spring. My question to you though, is because you're a biologist, should all zones allow this, not just zone 20?
Hey, that's a good question. I'm going to say no, in my just without, you know, without years of research, and then, you know, I change my mind, but just based on, you know, what I know already, that because Ontario in itself and in the northern latitudes, whether it's in Minnesota or northern Ontario, we do know that all our bass do spawn at the same time. Like I mentioned before, when we go down south of Florida, over the course of 4 months, all the bass spawn. Lake Ontario and its, you know, and its subsequent bays in Bay Quinte, Hamilton Harbor, Toronto Harbor, all those things, has a vast population of bass, right? It's got a large population of largemouth and smallmouth bass, which a pre-spawn season, you know, the possibility of disrupting any potential spawn. Considering they all do spawn at one time, it's a brick in the wall that if you take out the wrong brick, the whole thing can crash. You know, it's a less likely to happen in a big water situation. This is why they started, you know, in zone 20 to do this. But I would hard for me to believe it'd be sustainable in small waters. You get, you know, small lakes in the Kawarthas, even smaller lakes in, you know, in central Ontario and things like that, or eastern Ontario, that again, because the climate does change so much in our province, we know that we can have a warm spring, we can have a cold spring, and there's only two moons in which these bass are going to spawn in, and one of them does land in this pre-spawn time. If we ended up with warm water, warm enough for those bass to turn on that full moon, we're catching spawning bass during this open season in lakes that don't have the population to withstand that pressure, right? Because they're all there at that one time. So keeping it to big water where there's big population of fish with a low chance of disrupting that, that's where they're going to start. So hard for me to see it happen in other parts of Ontario. Of course, northern Ontario, you know, they don't revere their largemouth bass sort of as much as we do. They're not even, some places wouldn't even, you know, sustain them as sport fish, coarse fish. And a lot of guys up there even think the smallmouth bass are invasive, right? We know that. So they're like, yeah, open the season. We don't mind. If we disrupt them, that's great. You know, our lake trout and walleye will love them.
I was going to say, that was kind of my next question is like, why is it opening your own? But yeah, that's exactly what I was kind of thinking in my head, is they don't appreciate the bass because they want the walleye, they want the pike, they want the muskie, they want the lakers. So that's what they're going to protect. So they don't care if the bass numbers get hurt because they don't care about bass.
The motivation for the Ministry of Natural Resources, of course, is two-pronged, right? It's both the conservation of the indigenous species that we have. It's about protecting those species that live and thrive and survive here. But it's also protecting the sport as well, right? So they have to balance both between maintaining a sport that, that people pay money to do. And that's why they, choose what they're going to put their money into, stocking certain fish and not stocking certain fish, having some fish that open year round, which if it helps the other species, they'll choose to do it. So,
because we even see that with pike too. So in the, what zone is it where it's open year round? Zone 17, I think.
17, yeah.
So 17, and because pike aren't native to that area, but they're migrating in.
That's correct.
And so again, you can fish pike all year round. Doesn't matter if they're spawning, whatnot. Doesn't matter because we're trying to protect the other species that are there. And I think even before, one of the first interesting fishing facts was about smallmouth bass. Are they invasive? Every year, I think they're expanding 4 kilometers further north. Every year, something like that. So they are moving further and further ahead, into our waters. So it makes sense that, they weren't in that lake before. It wasn't intended for them to be there. So why not just have open season for them?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's what they're doing with the pike now, open season year round. They just say, well, if it could put a dent in it or slow down either the crossbreeding or pike can take over muskie. So that does prove that they do recognize that having open season during spawning can have a detrimental effect. Sometimes they want that in the sense. So of course they're going to limit the largemouth bass in the southern Ontario to areas that maybe can sustain that pressure, like Lake Ontario and its bays and the tributaries there.
I was just going to say, speaking back of Zone 20 bass fishing early season, maybe before we end the episode, if you could just give us a quick story of an example of an awesome day that you had out fishing.
Awesome day that I had out fishing. Listen, if you want to have a day where you can have almost a triple digit day, 100 fish day, it's going to be in the pre-spawn. Like I say, it's a time of year where all the fish are doing the same thing. Once you get into July and August, right, of course, there's bass in the deep water, there's bass in 15 feet of the weed lines, there's bass under the lily pads. But in the month of April, going into May, everybody's in the same room. One of my, best days a couple of years ago, just trying to find a pattern and things like that. I think my time frame, we get to the point where you're running a stopwatch and in 90 minutes is 70 fish a night. So a day like that needs no more explanation. So that's, you can hardly hook, reel in and release like that. Those moments give you time to pause and think, wow, if it went any further than this, maybe we could do, damage the population, but we're all within, the guidelines of what the Ministry of Natural Resources allows. So, we're going to, and again, ethically, we're going to respect that and do our best. So again, my Ontario PB came just last two pre-spawns ago at 7 pounds, 9 ounces. Yeah. And that was just, that's a small little corner of, in Zone 20 of Lake Ontario, where you just think it wouldn't be anything. And the next step now is exploring the smallmouth bass. Guys, we know that smallmouth bass in Lake Ontario are growing to exponential proportions. Again, talking with Dan last week and everything else like that, we got ourselves a gentleman's bet of who's going to catch the first 10 coming out of here, because there's going to be one coming in the next couple of years. There's so many eights caught last year, more than I have fingers on my hands. Pre-spawn, who knows how big those fish would be. So that's going to be the next journey is getting out for a week or two for smallmouth bass in pre-spawn in big water Lake Ontario. There's going to be some stories told after that.
Well, we'll have to have you back on to hear all those. You keep us informed when you have a story worthy for a podcast. You let us know. We'll have you back on.
Oh, yes. Oh, there should be.
We didn't mention this, but we're actually going fishing with Brad in I think probably 2 weeks.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Maybe we'll have some stories from that.
Well, that's what I was hoping you guys were gonna lead into when you're talking about onboard stories. I think, there's gonna be a few. Yeah. So stay tuned, folks. Yeah.
I'll be telling you about how I caught 50 bass in one day and all of them at least under 12 inches.
At least under 12 inches. Hey, listen, man, there's tournaments there that would win you that. So yeah, we're going to have a good time, guys.
So I thought we could just do our housekeeping quick. We would like to thank again, Brad, Canadian Cowboy Outdoors on Instagram.
That's right.
We'll link everything down in the show notes. So you can definitely check out his Instagram if you don't follow him. His content is amazing. There's different kinds of social media accounts I found on Instagram. There's people that create and there's people that scroll and look at the stuff that people create. Brad is someone that creates good content. So make sure you follow him on Instagram. And again, I'll link everything down below. We would like to thank everyone who has recently written us a review. We've had a lot of really good reviews coming in. We do appreciate that. We'd like to thank, too, all of our Patreon members who help support the show costs so that me and Andrew don't have to pay every month out of our pockets because we're pretty poor. So we do appreciate that. You guys are awesome. We do appreciate it. And that is all for now. That is all the housekeeping, Andrew. Wasn't that much?
Perfect. You're really good at housekeeping. I'm sure your wife appreciates that, Jesse.
She does, yeah.
Now, before we end the episode, as always, we're going to have the quote of the week, and we're going to leave that over to Brad. What's the quote of the week for us now?
All right. Well, I think this quote of the week kind of stays within the theme of your guys' show and podcast here. My advice to everybody when it comes to multi-species angling is, why be really good at one thing when you can be average at a lot of things?